Podcast with a K. Well, hello, it's me, Christian Corley, again, and I'm here with another Podcast with a K, featuring some contributions from our team of Brian Turnover and James McLean. We're here to talk about Oxygen, the fifth episode of the 10th series of Doctor Who, which is Peter Capaldi's last series here in 2017. And there's lots to talk about, so we'll go straight in and find out what our good friend Brian Turnover thought of Oxygen.
So for me, I kind of felt Oxygen fell in line with the rest of Series 10. Not bad. It was an enjoyable episode, but it again was not stand out as an episode. And I feel like somehow the Doctor has become this force for stopping accidental incidents in the galaxy rather than stopping forces of evil. So I'm getting a little tired of that aspect. But the episode was good. There was a lot of good things throughout it. Again, the production values were well used in this story. I liked the costumes, the spacesuits. I liked the characters. I felt it was a well-served story. It worked well, just, you know, not thrilling me as I would hope that they would completely thrill me. But again, I'm perfectly happy to be enjoying the episodes this season.
What do you think about having Nardole in space?
Oh, Nardole. He's not as bad as I thought he was going to be. I thought he was going to be really obnoxious throughout the season. And I have to admit, even like at the end of the episode, when he's berating the Doctor, basically, I thought that was one of his best moments. And the funny thing is, I realized one of the things that I don't quite like about Nardole is that he reminds me of Matt Smith. And I didn't like that with Matt Smith. Goofy for goofy's sake, far too much goofy. But when he plays the serious, like he does berating the Doctor at the end, so much better. But especially when he was sitting there trying to remember the voice of the computer in the spacesuit as a woman that he had once known, I had really gotten a flashback to Matt Smith with the way he acted that entire scene. And I was just like, okay, you know, like I'm not disliking you as I once did, but man, that's so weird that you're just basically a bald Matt Smith.
It didn't really go anywhere that either, did it?
No, that didn't go anywhere. And then I wonder if they're going to go anywhere with his whole where he changed his face to go on the run, you know, who is Nardole when he's not being Nardole, you know? Mm.
Interesting, yeah. So, as you may have guessed, dear listener, we're not doing a clip show. James McLean is also here, sitting very silently, waiting for his entry.
Yeah.
Possibly more ways than one, I don't know. Where are you with Nardole?
Where was I with Nardole?
Where are you with Nardole, yeah?
Well, I was okay with him, though. I have to agree with your attempted pre-recording prank with Brian that he is very extreme, like Matt Smith. I never put that association over. That's quite interesting. Yeah, he is possibly the most Stephen Moffat era character that's going at the moment, where he sort of plays for exposition or plays for funny laughs, but doesn't really exist in any other capacity. So he shifts from, as Brian says, that extreme between light comedy and expositional drama, where, you know, his drama is nothing but to sort of push forward something that's going on in the plot. So yeah, Nardole doesn't do much for me at all.
He's being Alfred, isn't he, in some ways?
Oh my God.
He's being Alfred?
Alfred.
Oh, Alfred. I thought Alfred is in an alpha male. I was thinking, God, that's a
bit of a stretch.
That's interesting. Think about that.
From the Jeremy Corbyn school of alpha males, perhaps.
He is definitely playing the Alfred level. But he wasn't really playing it much this series. It seems to have grown a bit. It was very much, I liked him in, as we've said before, it was the only thing I liked in the Christmas special. Mm. And he sort of lost a bit of that this series because, again, he sort of was just played for the joke. He wasn't really an Alfred until really that last scene where he was actually doing what he was doing in the Christmas episode and felt like he had some sort of level of authority or some level of input as Alfred has in the, as we're talking about the Batman Alfred, Alfred Pennyworth, that sort of feeling of where he is. Obviously subservient, yet at the same time he's quite free to speak his mind, and what he says does carry some sort of paternal wisdom. So yeah, that he was I mean, I like the episode. I like the episode more than Brian did. I've liked all the episodes so far. I've actually, again, as we've said before, I've actually enjoyed watching the series, and that's been the first time so consistently. And to be honest, even Russell T. Davis so far, by episode four, there was normally one episode I was a bit blah with.
Yeah.
Be it the Shakespeare Code. I'm trying to think of... I wasn't over keen on the premiere for Donna's season. I can't remember what it was called now. What was this? With the adipose. What was that one called?
Partners in Crime.
Partners in Crime. Mm. That didn't blow me away. It was too comical. So, I mean, to be fair, this has been very consistent for me, more so than most seasons of Doctor Who. So I'm still really enjoying it. I mean, there are still tropes there that we've seen throughout. And as I think one of the major fan sites, be it Den of Geek or one of them, were saying quite fairly that there were some similarities to last year's Sandman episode. But Sandman episode was one of the most atrocious things I've seen in Doctor Who. Well, this was actually a really solid piece for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree with largely most of that. I stuck it on, watched it glued, and then it finished. So, you know, in many ways, that is job done for Doctor Who, in my opinion. If it's entertaining me for the allotted time frame... a lot of time slot, and I'm shocked that we've got to the end so quickly, then, you know, that's an advantage. Peter Capaldi continues to be absolutely wonderful in this series. His delivery, there's probably a bit of squee going on here, because there are echoes of Tom Baker in there. So this was a conversation he was having with Bill in the TARDIS. But he just continues to be absolutely brilliant this series, and it's so... I mean, it's great that he's got a good set of stories, but it's so sad that he's going. And I've probably said this in every podcast, but I just wish he wasn't going, because I'm finding him so watchable. And I found him watchable to start with, but now I'm finding... I think it's because the character is there. They've stopped trying to do stuff with him. They've stopped trying to... Maybe, you know that thing where actors want to go in, where a script takes an actor in a particular direction and they want to do it in a particular way, and then the other actor does it in a particular way, and they've got the quote bold choices or whatever. And they're maybe going away from what they're supposed to be doing in things which are more kind of compartmentalized, like Doctor Who. So we don't have any of that Clara nonsense. Whatever Clara was supposed to have been, or any of the River Song nonsense. We just got the Doctor with a young companion, and it's in that respect, it is pure Doctor Who. That's what Doctor Who is about, an adventure with a young companion. And the Doctor as well being the person who's sorting things out, as opposed to the companion doing it, which has happened an awful lot, especially since 2005.
Yeah.
So I thought the set was excellent as well in Oxygen. The space station was really good, and it was very Doctor Who as well. It wasn't trying to be something else. It felt as if it could have come, you know, from many. You know, it had a kind of. It wasn't trying not to be associated with other space or space bases or whatever that you've seen in Doctor Who.
Yeah, it felt. It somehow felt fresh, even though, like I said, this sort of industrial future, they've done a lot. But then, to be fair, this season they've done one where you had the very high-tech future as well.
The Windade, yeah.
And that was also had a bit of industrial too. But it has... I've just enjoyed him through this, and I think you're right. It goes back to what we were saying back in 2014, that it felt like every episode they were playing a different Doctor, as if each episode they were trying... They couldn't find the level for him. And, you know, he would be so different in Robots of Sherwood to how he would be in Listen and how he was in the two-part episode finale to Forest of the Night, whatever it was called.
Yeah.
There was just no consistency. And then in the second season, he just felt watered down and a little contrived. They were pushing too much to make him sort of the guitarist, the sunglasses. They were pushing him too much to be a little more restrained and kind. And that was just meaning, and I think you're right, because they got the wrong sort of companion doctor dynamic. It just meant that the companion, Clara, who was too powerful, was becoming too, was dominating him. which was crazy. And I think, you know, talk about this now, that is what I hated about the last series, was that he felt dominated. Whenever he came, whether it was Clara or whether it was Missy, he felt, Peter Capaldi's role felt subdued by these characters. And that just felt really wrong. And it didn't feel very enjoyable. And the only time it was slightly bearable was in Heaven Sent, when he had no one. And the rest of the time, he just felt like a doddering old man a lot of the time. So this episode, this season, you're right, they've got this consistency. He seems to know what he's doing. I think you're right. I think he is heavily inspired by Tom Baker. I think more so than people realize. Initially, I think he was putting in a lot of, and the script was demanding him to put in a lot of the Tucker. But now he seems to be drawing from. And they were pushing towards Pertwee as well, weren't they? There was a lot of Pertweeisms, which I just never felt fitted him. And he seems to have been rejecting that. And it felt like he was rejecting it last season with the guitar and the hoodie. And this season he seems to be totally rejecting it. And as you say, his body language, I was thinking he was like Tom Baker when he was talking to the people on the space station.
Yeah.
There was a sort of Tom Baker sort of charm and sort of set laid backness to him, which Pertwee never had.
No.
And I think that's why I always thought he always looked utterly stupid in those Pertwee sort of velvety suits, like in the Christmas special. He just looks wrong. He's not that sort of, he's bohemic. He's Capaldi is more relaxed than that. He's not a stiff person. He wouldn't wear those sort of suits. He would wear something more relaxed. That seems to be more who he is. And they seem to have worked that out. And his hair, again, I mean, people have talked, I've seen memes now about his hair, how good his hair is. And yeah, they let his hair grow, and that just feels like him. So yeah, I mean, I know Brian, as I say, Brian's got, he's not, it sounds like Brian, you're not inspired by it, but you're enjoying it, but it's not blowing you away.
Yeah, like, I'll be honest, out of the entire 7 years that Stephen Moffat has been in charge of the show, all four of these episodes have potential to be rewatched again by me, where I can't say that about any other series that Stephen has done. I can think of, and I think I've said this before, but I can think of five episodes total that I would rewatch from the past 7 years prior to series 10. The rest of it, I felt it was very difficult to sit through most of those episodes. These I am enjoying. I think Knock Knock I probably enjoyed the least, whereas I think some people enjoyed the pilot the least, but for some reason Knock Knock just, it was good. But it for some reason so far was the least enjoyable for me. But this one,
it didn't knock you out.
It didn't knock me out. But no, Oxygen is a very good episode. I really enjoyed it. And like you guys said, this entire series, Peter Capaldi has been on point. I like Bill because I like what they're doing with Bill. I like that she's not becoming the super alien hero that the Doctor is when you can't. You know, I like the fact that Danger is not being enjoyed. I like the fact that she, with Nardole, wants to run into the TARDIS at one point. And we're going to be five episodes in soon, you know? And I really like that aspect a lot. There's so many good things going for it. The only thing that's a downer for me is, you know, like I said, the Matt Smith comparison with Nardole. I just don't like the comedy for the sake of comedy. I like comedy to have a purpose that works, that is funny because it works within the moment rather than just some goofball running around being a goofball. And I don't mean any disrespect to Matt Lucas, because he's good. And like I said, in that end scene, you can see what that man can do with acting. It was really good when he was berating the Doctor. But what I just don't like, what I'm tired of, is that every episode this season has been accidental. And that has been the majority of Moffat's era. And it looks like hopefully next week's episode is going to be better than that. We're going to get some kind of actual intent. But, you know, throughout the episode, they kept talking about, you know, suits aren't supposed to do this. They were hacked. They someone's intentionally doing this. And I thought, oh, cool. That's great. You know, someone's intentionally doing this. Let's find out what's going on, because it does seem really stupid that humans have to wear suits and earn credits to get the air that they breathe to do the job that they need to do in space, which is another thing that I found stupid about the episode, but whatever. But then it came down to, oh, no, it's just, hey, the suits realize that humans aren't necessary and it's just an accident and we can teach the suits better. And it was kind of like, wow, okay, well, you ruined that for me. The episode is good. It does work, even with that aspect. I just would like to see some actual malintent once in a while, because I like to see the Doctor actually stop evil, not just become tech support for the universe. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just kind of where I'm at with it. But I would just like to see more of him being the hero character, stopping bad guys once in a while.
Okay. Let's have a look at some Oxygen facts. It was written by Jamie Matheson, who's... A few people have been suggesting it might have been his first mishit. I would suggest that The Girl Who Died was probably his first mishit, which was season 9's Viking episode.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, definitely.
But that did have a... That was a Stephen Moffat co-credit. Matheson, of course, gave his Mummy on the Orient Express and Flatline. So he's doing well.
So, I mean, what gets me with this, and I was saying this to a friend just yesterday, I don't understand what has changed. Mm. This is what really gets me, because it means something in the model has changed, and I don't know if it's something within the cast, or does this in some way reflect on how I must change my opinion?
I don't know. Maybe Russell T. Davies is working without credit as script editor. I don't know.
Someone has actually said that to me.
Really?
Yeah, someone said, not no one who's in the know. I'm just saying Someone has asked that. Is it that Russell T. Davies, because we have known in the past that he has sort of had involvement in time to time when people aren't aware since he left. But I don't know. And it's just, you're getting scripts from people who, I mean, like The Forest of the Night was absolutely abysmal for me. It was on every level. And yet this year's the second episode was enjoyable. It seemed to be really well done. I mean, Jamie Matheson, as you say, has been fairly good on the whole. So to have a good one, this one should have been expected. But even so, it's not... The thing is, it's not just the story that was at fault before. It was the story, it was the tone, it was the pacing, it was the characterizations, it was the dynamics. There was so much wrong with the show that I don't understand how it's become so right. I'm using the same people, same actors essentially, bar one, principal cast-wise, same showrunner, mm-hmm. and a lot of the same writers. And yet what they're producing is better than what the writers seemed to be producing before, what the showrunner was producing before, and what the actors were delivering before. So what has it's changed?
Completely different
and why?
Focus, isn't it?
It just feels, it feels like a totally different focus. And I wonder, was the one thing that they decided to change? I mean, the one obvious quintessential thing that's changed is the companion. Is that the factor? Is it having looked at a different way of doing a companion totally then shifted the way that they have to write it? Because as soon as the companion isn't sort of entrenched as the Doctor's equal, but as Brian said, more of a cipher for the audience who isn't there to save the day, but still has a pivotal role, mm-hmm. has that meant everything else has had to shift? Is it budget? Have they had a lesser budget, so they've had to rethink how they do their pacing? Things a little slower because they don't have the money and the time to be doing breakneck fast action. Have they listened to feedback? I don't know. Sorry.
Yeah, they also just made her a normal human being. You know, no crack in her wall with an imaginary friend who came to reality. No split person over multiple timelines influencing the Doctor's history. No, she's just no time traveler who's meeting the Doctor at various points of his life, you know, like everybody in Moff's era, save for what, Rory? Except no, he was, because he died a million times and became a Roman who helped him save the day too. You know, so far nothing is special about Bill aside from the fact that she is ordinary, which is what's needed. You know, like we are ordinary. You know, we need that base in the show to relate to. And it works very well. That's the main thing that I was saying, that her reactions all seem real and true to me. You know, I mean, there are certain jokes that he played with her, you know, just trying to circumvent the usual things, like the TARDIS is bigger on the inside and she says it looks like a kitchen kind of thing, you know, whatever. That's fine. You know, differences are okay. But I like the fact that otherwise her reactions are normal. My only fear, though, is I agree with you, like something has changed. Is it one thing? Is it multiple things? Did Moff have a sit down with himself? Did he sit down with somebody else and say something's got to change? But episode 5 is now written by Stephen Moffat again. And it's from what I understand, it's part one of a 3-part story.
So I understand. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Missy's back. I would assume this is probably where we're going to see John Sim. There's lots of potential within this story that it could fall back onto old habits of Moffitt. So I'm a little wary going into next week's story, to be honest. I'm hopeful that it will continue the trend that we've seen in the last four episodes, but I'm a little bit cautious right now.
Well, if Missy is sinister, then that works. If we've got kind of sub River Song dialogue from Missy, that, you know, that kind of frisson between the two, then that's not interesting.
I mean, this what the problem with Missy has always been is that they write her that she is, and this is where she has never felt like the master to me, really, is that she never feels like she's one-upped by the Doctor at all. There's never a time where he feels in control. And that means within wit as well as resolution.
Yeah.
And I think that always bothers me a bit with the character.
Well, maybe that's... I mean, maybe this is going towards that... I mean, it's going to upset a lot of people, but it maybe is going towards that, because they can't leave the relationship like that if this is Capaldi's favorite final season, because Missy's probably not going to come back. We don't know, obviously, but it would, if there's going to be, you know, if the sweeping brush is out for Chibnall's era, then there's a good chance that Missy won't be coming back. So is it that they're doing some retconning on Missy and deciding that she's not the master?
Well, I think we're all, without sounding like total gits, we're all kind of hoping that. Are we not? I'm not again, because I don't... Going away from the whole, can Doctors transform into Time Lords or anything like that, it's just simply she's just never felt like the master.
Well, no, she has never felt like the master, you're right.
And that is, in a sense, has been a quite a good thing, because she's felt like a brand new character saddled with the master, which they've never really played on particularly, because they've never needed to, because she's not really the master. She's
the only thing that they did play on was that friend relationship, but they played on it really awkwardly with the Cyberman story, her first story, where it was like, I just want you to love me kind of story. So I built you a Cyberman army. You know, it was really too weird even for their relationship, you know? I'm with you guys in the respect that, you know, it would be nice if they made Missy stand as a character on her own rather than be another master. But I unfortunately have the feeling that the only reason that John Sim is coming back is not just to get a multi-master story and you know, to cement that Missy is the master, but I think he wants to do what he did with the 50th anniversary and show a regeneration from Sim into Missy. So I think we're going to get both a multi-master story and the regeneration scene, so that it can finally be, you know, it can't be disproven that Missy is the master. I think that's where Moff's going with that, in my opinion, rather than let her stand on her own.
Okay. Directed by Charles Palmer, who has done some marvellous directing on Doctor Who in the past, such as Smith and Jones, Shakespeare Code, Human Nature, Family of Blood, and he's also got The Eaters of Light, which is coming up later this series. And Charles Palmer is, of course, the son of great British character actor Geoffrey Palmer, who is absolutely wonderful in everything he does. And I was watching him just a few days ago angrily complaining over the lack of sausages on his table in Fawlty Towers.
Right.
That's the episode with the... that's the Kipper and the Corpse. He's absolutely marvellous in that. Just a little sidestep there. Audience figures, time, chaps. This isn't good news. Oxygen achieved, say, .2news.net, an overnight viewing figure of 3.57 million viewers, a share of 20% of the total TV audience. The week before it was 24, going on 25%. So that is a big reduction. That's UK only. AI stays the same at 83, audience appreciation, so that's promising. We don't know what the final figures for that are, but Knock Knock's final figure was 5.73 million, which made it the 21st most watched programme that week, and the 7th most watched on BBC One. Now, I did have a long kind of monologue about audience figures in last week's podcast with a K, so I've got nothing new to add to that, so feel free to go back and check that out. It started off strongly, though, in summary, did this series, and it has dropped into the into the lower third of the top 30. I can't really see that changing until maybe, well, when John Sim returns, that might give it a bit of a boost. End of the series with Sidemen, again, might give it a boost. But I can't see Doctor Who landing back in the top 10, really, until the regeneration.
No, I can't either. But then we, you know, without it sounding like it's all about us, did sort of say that. Just didn't see that that was ever going to change.
No, indeed.
There's just a lot that needs to change with the show, I think. And this happens with shows. They use very hard for any show, no matter how good, to kick itself back into gear.
Yeah.
That sort of sense. It just doesn't often really happen. So, yeah. It's a shame, but as I say, I don't think people should be too shocked.
We'll come back to Oxygen and next week's episode in a few minutes. I think there's a couple of things I want to just leap upon. We're recording this on Monday. So, first of all, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, the actress who has, for some reason, been linked to the lead role in Doctor Who, post Capaldi, said at the BAFTA Awards last night, or, well, it was called the BAFTA Awards, but you may want to recall it the BAFDAC Awards, and change the acronym from BAFTA to BBAFTAC, because there's barely a non-BBC show nominated, never mind won an award. And she said, basically, after winning an award, when she spoke to the press, that she knew nothing about it, basically. As far as she was concerned, she wasn't being the next Doctor. So there is that. There is also massive news today in the world of Doctor Who, because the 10th Doctor and Rose are back.
Oh, yes, I saw that.
At
yeah.
Big Finish, David Tennant and Billy Piper have recorded 3 stories for the second volume of 10th Doctor Adventures, which is good news. Brian Terranova, 10th Doctor and Big Finish lover.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. How are you feeling about that?
I think it's good for them. I know that David was really excited to be doing Big Finish radio plays, even before he did them with Catherine Tate. I know he had done some prior to being the 10th Doctor, but when he was the 10th Doctor, he was asking if there was possibilities that he could do 10th Doctor radio dramas. But unfortunately, I haven't even heard any of his work with Donna. I want to, but I just haven't. And I would be curious to hear these with Rose. But I haven't listened to any Big Finish for maybe 2 years now.
Right.
So I'm way behind the times on things. I don't know. I will be honest and say that much like the show under Moffat's era, when the show, when the radio dramas had Nick Briggs become the producer, the dramas took a dip in quality for me. Not that they were bad, they just weren't quite as enjoyable as they used to be, you know, so I kind of stepped away from them because it seemed a little, this is going to sound so terrible, but it seemed a little laborsome to listen to them rather than enjoying mm-hmm. what I was listening to. But I'm curious to hear those. I'm curious to hear some of the Tom Baker ones that I missed out on, specifically now that Romana 2 is back, because I would really like to hear those more than Leela radio plays.
Do Big Finish still consider the 8th Doctor to be, like, their Doctor?
I don't know. I think in a sense they do, because when you think about it, they've given him an era. You know, he's the only Doctor who exclusively really kind of has a life with them. Everybody else just kind of has extra stories that can be slotted into their eras, but they've given this Doctor a full era. You could argue that that was going to happen with the War Doctor before John Hurt passed away, but they only got, as far as I understand, they only got one series with him. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the big thing was Paul McGann. And I mean, if I remember back in the day when Big Finish first started, Stephen Moffat was one of the writers that was originally in the writer's room with them, that was interested in doing radio plays with them. Yeah. But when he found out that they didn't have Paul McGann, he backed out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So when Big Finish got Paul McGann, I mean, he's still their guy. But I think, honestly, and I'm not sure, I believe, I could be wrong with it, but I thought Matt Smith was doing a couple plays too. But maybe they just did plays from his era in the two-hander format. But with having David Tennant anyway, that's probably a major coup for them to have a new series Doctor, because that means you're going to get a whole different listenership coming in out of the people who ordinarily wouldn't really do anything too much with the classic Doctors. But
I was just thinking
Paul McGann was their big thing for a long while.
Yeah. I was just thinking it'd be nice for some other Doctors to get sort of Dark Eyes / Doom Coalition style big epic box sets.
They did that with Sylvester McCoy.
Okay.
He got a few, or two that I can think of at least. And it's a good way to do it, honestly. But it's on one hand, it's a good way to do it. And on the other hand, it's not. Like, I liked the individual stories because it felt more classic and it felt easier to go ahead and listen to an individual episode of a season, even if they did do a running arc, and in many cases better than the TV show has done running arcs. But when you get Doom Coalition or Dark Eyes or so on, it's four radio plays all connected with one central theme. And while they do have their kind of coincidental stories happening in the meantime, or the paths that they have to take in those stories, it makes it feel like it's like a 4-hour movie kind of feel rather than a full season. So I don't know. In some hands, to me, it feels like it's less of a season of Doctor Who, like we were getting, for instance, with Paul McGann in his first season. Like, his first year's worth of audios in the range that they were doing could have been a full series, and it sounded great. The box sets seem more of an event piece, a short season, like they're doing kind of with the X-Files now, for instance. But they're not bad, and this is making it sound terrible. They're not bad. They're really enjoyable. For some reason, just to me, in my head, the way Doctor Who should be, it's an episodic format, individual stories, always works best than a completed or than a connected adventure.
Okay. This box set comes out in several versions. There's a limited edition version of 5,000 copies and the standard version as well. There is the Infamy of Zaros, by John Donne, Sword of the Chevalier by Guy Adams, which also features Nicholas Grace, great British actor, and Called Vengeance by Matt Fitton, which is an Ice Warriors story. I should also mention as well that Guy Henry, who was the body in sort of the body and the voice of Grand Moff Tarkin in Rogue One, is in the cast as well. So a little bit of Star Wars crossover there for you. So there's the Doctor Who news. We are therefore approaching another episode of Doctor Who, as we are when we're in between episodes, and I think it's probably fair to say that Doctor Who is in its past, 13 episodes a season. You get to a certain point, you think, oh Christ, we're halfway now. Oh, it's all, it's going to be ending soon. It's with that point so far into it that same time that we've already passed is now in front of us, and it's going to be gone so quickly. And that's, that's with 13 episodes. This year we've only got 12 episodes, and we're kind of getting towards the end of it as of next week, because Oxygen was episode 5, which means that
5,
which means that this week's episode, which is Extremis, is episode 6. So when we next convene,
are we sure?
Yes, we are sure. Yeah. I can recap. Episode 1 was The Pilot. Episode 2 was Smile. Episode 3 was Thin Ice. Episode 4 was Knock Knock. Yeah. And episode 5, Oxygen. So when we next convene to record a podcast, we are at the halfway point of Doctor Who Series 10. Which, bit of a surprise, frankly. There you go.
To be honest, I'm actually quite happy with that. I'd like Series 10 to go with a feeling of, this has been really worth it, this has been a great ending. Mm-hmm. And the less episodes there are, the less chances of it screwing up. So
right,
being
yeah.
Almost halfway in, and them all being really good, means regardless of how bad the back end is, which, as we all know, as we've said many times before, is important in its legacy, at least there were 5 good episodes this series. I couldn't name you one episode last series that I really rated. Fear the Raven possibly would have if they hadn't blown it. And again, it was still... I think it's now the problem for Series 9 is that Series 10 has reinvigorated the format in the way that Series 8 should have, and maybe Series 5 should have, to an extent that even the highlights of Series 9, which would have been Fear the Raven, maybe, seem bad in comparison, because it was all about how amazing Clara was and how, you know, her amazingness sort of comes to her downfall, which was very powerful for that one episode, but then totally undone by the last one. So yeah, I don't know. In a sense, I want this to carry on. In a sense, I don't want it to carry on to the point where it's going to go wrong. And as Brian says, I have to admit, I have fears for the next three.
Well, the next three aren't all Moffat.
Yeah.
Number six is Moffat. Number seven is Peter Harness and Moffat. And number eight is Toby Whithouse.
It's not so much the Moffat. It's that I've just, as I've said before, I've never seen many Doctor Who's which have gone into two parties, let alone three, which have really worked. Mm. But then they are quite varied. From the what we were seeing, they were sort of like the Utopia Sound of Drums sort of three-parters rather than sort of like set in the third. So maybe. I don't know. Yeah, I still share a bit of Brian's concern, because they're bringing back a character which epitomises the Moffat era of being loud, comical, without really any sort of substance.
Yeah,
that's just fun. But will that fit with what we've got, and how will it? Could it ruin what we have? I don't know.
She's batty, isn't she? And we're about to talk about Missy now, in case you hadn't realised. She's batty as a box of frogs, but there's no real menace to her, because, you know, once you get that idea that she wants to be friends with the Doctor, then the menace goes, and you end up with a character who is, quote, misunderstood and maybe needs someone to look after them, rather than being an out-and-out lunatic villain or a sinister villain or whatever, who's got grand plans for universal domination. They've all gone now, haven't they, in favour of, you know, having japes with the Doctor, making him look a little bit silly, only to sort of like maybe be around to pick up the pieces, yeah. So, do you know, just it's completely nothing to do with it. I drove past a crematorium yesterday that was having an open day.
Okay.
That's pretty sinister, isn't it?
Yeah.
Go and have a look around. But yeah, so sorry, I digress. So yeah, that thing about Missy being the master, you know, maybe she is, maybe she isn't, whatever. But there's the relationship between the Doctor and the Master in Missy form isn't the one that we've seen before, and it gets to the point where she turns into, you know, like the mad auntie with the cats or whatever, you know.
Yeah. No. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. Definitely, I'm with you. And I mean, just thinking about it some more, why I'm concerned, you know, it's partially that it's Stephen Moffat writing. Actually, it's a big part that it's Stephen Moffat writing, if I'm going to be honest. But it's more so that, you know, since series five up to now, you know, things have not gone well, in my opinion. So to see that so far five episodes have gone well, especially after such an atrocious Christmas episode, it's luck to me. You know, like we're sitting here finding what has changed, what have they done right, what format have they gotten, but it feels more like luck. You know, once we make it to the end of series 10 and they're all good, then I'll believe that they actually found a format that they felt needed changing and they did something good for it. Whereas here right now, we're five episodes in, number six is coming up, and there's still so much left to go. I feel like the ball can drop at any moment. And these five episodes were just kind of, you know, maybe Moffat had a good day with the scripts and just said, hey, you know what? Those look good. Go ahead. Don't worry. I don't need to edit them, you know, but now the downfall is going to happen. And it's only because of the past few years of Doctor Who, since he has taken over the show, that has me in that fear. It's not really like, anything fair to say, but if this were Chibnall's first season, I would be sitting here going, yeah, great, this is the change that we needed. Awesome, you're going to keep this up, aren't you? Things are going to keep going. But it's not. It's Moffitt's last season, and it's Capaldi's last season. You know, and I know for sure, you know, we're going to see Clara and me and the TARDIS again, and things are just going to drop from there. And, you know, the whole Missy Master thing, a two-parter there, and Missy just being Missy and Moffitt with his sex jokes and everything, you know, he can't keep it up, can he? He can't keep this run up, is my fear. And if he can, good for him. But that's where it stems from me. Like, I've really enjoyed these past few episodes, and I want to keep enjoying them. But I'm very much afraid that he's going to drop the ball.
Maybe he won't. There's part of me, and maybe I'm just getting a little optimistic in my old age, which is thinking perhaps this is the Doctor Who that he wanted to do, but he sort of was caught in a sort of some form of trap where it was
going to break out.
Yeah, where he was finding, could be that he looks at his episodes and thinks, this isn't really the Doctor Who I wanted. This is a sort of Doctor Who which is what I can do naturally because I'm that sort of witty writer, and it just comes out and I like to shock and surprise. And, you know, maybe there's part of him that is just like, no, this is not. Because he's such a classic Who fan, and yet his episodes very rarely reflect any of those qualities until this series, which, given he's a massive classic Who fan, you think, I'm surprised this sort of thing hasn't happened sooner. So I don't know. I'm just trying to be optimistic here because he's a professional writer. I'm not a fan of a lot of his action material. His Sherlock stuff I was never a massive fan of. But, you know, he is a very smart writer. So is this just him making a tonal shift? And if so, that's kind of exciting.
Do you think maybe he's made decisions that, like, important decisions with regards to companions and gimmicks and timey-wimey gimmicks that he thinks people once because they've shown so much praise for them in the past, and by doing that Moffat's written himself into some corners that he's found difficult to break out of? I'm thinking of things like River Song and River Song's Heritage and The Impossible Girl and, you know, The Asylum of the Daleks thing and then The Splinters and all that.
Well, that's what I want. Yeah,
I don't think it's that simple. I think Moffat likes that kind of storytelling. I think Moffat, like we've said before, wanted Doctor Who to be his show, which is why he's changed so much of the past to kind of be connected to his era or stem from his era. I think he wanted not to take over an established show, but he wanted to recreate the show. And in all honesty, I'm going to make a comparison here. You guys can roll with it if you want, but I see him like Donald Trump. He sees that people hate him, and he sees that people don't like his work, but he just wants to be loved so much. But Moffat, unlike Trump, is seeing, well, this is my last season. I have to get things right. I have to have people liking the show, and I have to have people thinking of me in a good light because I don't want to be hated when I leave the show. So if I get this last season right, like James has said a million times before, you can have a bad beginning and a bad middle, but you can't have a bad end. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking that Moffat is trying to leave the show with a good end. So he gets people like us going, you know what, well done, that was a great season, thank you very much. Whereas Trump will hopefully get impeached and get, you know, what he deserves. Moffat might do a good thing by us and do that. But I think you're giving him too much credit, in my opinion, to say that he had things thrust upon him and made his era what it was because he thought that's what we wanted. I think he did exactly what he wanted. He did the show that he wanted. I mean, look at Moffat and his show history with his sexual comedies and everything, every sex joke that he's even made, even in Russell's era. And I know Russell had plenty of his own, but River Song was a complete fantasy of Moffat's, you know? So, like, that's not giving us what we want. That's giving him what he wants. So I think, honestly, whatever has changed was him possibly sitting there going, I got to go out on a high, you know, and for, I don't know why though, really, because some people love his era. You'd think he would just keep appeasing them and move on. But something changed, and I think that's what it is.
Do you think there's two things that could? I know we're going on a bit here, but there's two things which springs to mind is the Capaldi factor. Is the Capaldi factor in there? Is has he gained more influence? Is this sort of things that he's...
That's a good point.
He's a very powerful, from what I hear, he's quite a strong personality, and I don't mean that in the sort of way where we normally mean by that in show business that he's a dick. I'm not
he's
saying
an asshole.
No.
He is a strong personality. Yeah. He has very specific ideas about how he wants to play and what he does.
Well, let us not forget Peter Capaldi has an Oscar.
He can write.
He knows this industry, doesn't he? So,
So is he a factor? I mean, I don't know. I'm still thinking about that factor that Moffat. I wonder maybe even because he wanted this or the BBC wanted this or I don't know. But there's this movement towards the reboot. Whether that has actually in some ways helped him? Could it be that rebooting it has meant that he's put aside all he's done? And he's sort of pretty much dovetailed everything he could and has given him the opportunity to try and set out a new... And with Sherlock now... I've got to be careful here because I'm not sure how much Sherlock was still, you know, a factor when he was when they were producing...
Well,
we
don't
writing.
Know, do we? No, we're not sure.
So, dovetails. Were the pressures that were coming off in other areas allowed him to sort of focus here? Or is it, as Brian said, is it that he's had less focus here and other people have been more involved... And it's changed the show. I think it's really fascinating.
Or could it be that he has been in a way... Now, this isn't the right term. Treading water isn't the right term. But he has been kind of not having an end game to his era of Doctor Who. Has he therefore... Now he has been pushed into having an end game. Has that focused him? Because Russell T Davies always wanted to do the 5 years.
Yeah.
Stephen Moffat's never had that, and he's never had the opportunity to leave. I think there was nearly a time, but I don't think they got very far with that back in 2013. You know, since then, he hasn't had the opportunity to leave, presented to him on a plate, here's your successor. So he's never had an X-year plan.
True.
So a lot of it has been kind of without that, having that, you know, that exit sign in front of you or that end sign in front of you and him having to work towards an ending until series 10.
Could be. I think it is something which, interestingly enough, fandom doesn't seem to really be talking about, which, you know, the critics and everything is that the differences between this and the previous systems, series. I know a lot of people are saying that they're really enjoying this and yeah. I know there's some people who say they're not, which is absolutely fine. But I just kind of think it's interesting that no one's really talking about what has changed because it just feels to me like something big has changed here and no one's really asking what it was because I think that is fascinating. It's fascinating for critics to be looking back and reflecting on, you know, have we got it wrong? Was the wrong people? Did we all assume that Moffat couldn't write Doctor Who and now he can? Or is there other factors? Or has he changed for the fans? Has he changed for himself? As you say, is it because he knows he's now got someone who's going to replace him, so that's changed how he plays his game? Is it that his pre-reboot to the reboot has given him a fresh perspective? Is it that other people involved? Is it Capaldi? These are really interesting questions, which I doubt will ever get answered, which are raised by this very different quality of episodes.
You know, and the thing on that too is that I honestly don't even care if we ever get an answer to that, so long as the series continues the way that it has been for these past 5 episodes. You know, if it continues to be this good till the end, and if he can go ahead and blow me away with an episode or two, that would be great too. But as it is, as a season, I feel like I would rewatch all of these. You know, like one of my favorite things is to pick an era of Doctor Who and just rewatch it in order, or even just pick a season of Doctor Who and rewatch it in order. And that's classic and new series as well, you know? And I don't do that for Moffat's era so far, none of them. Like I said, in the beginning of this podcast, there's only a handful of episodes that I watch, but I don't watch a season in order. This season so far, missing out the Christmas episode, you know, which isn't even important. The only thing it tells you is how and why Nardole is around. This season so far, I would rewatch every one of these in order. They're that enjoyable to me. And as long as they continue in that vein, that would be great for me. I would love to know what changed. I would love to know why, and maybe Moffat will write a book about it. Who knows? But if they continue to be this good, I'll live without the answer.
There was a chat Stephen Moffat did at some event at the weekend or late last week, where he said various things. You can catch up with him on the BBC Writers Room website. I'm talking as if I'm still podcasting here, aren't I? Anyway, one of the things he said was, nobody on a production thinks about the time needed for the process of actually writing apart from the writer. So the BBC Writers Room has tweeted that, and someone's retweeted it, Amy Thurgood. I'm not sure if she's on Doctor Who. She's a script editor, and she says, except for your script editor, it's all they think about.
Nice.
But I enjoyed it. It was a good episode.
Yeah, I liked it as well, and there was a certain amount of fear. I like also, I mean, I always said, again, it goes against what I've always said, that Sonic Screwdriver was useful because it just helped move the plot along. But if you slow the plot down, as they've been doing with these pacings, you can have the excuse to get rid of it and still have a good story. So, you know, 45 minutes, you don't need the Sonic Screwdriver, is quite clear. There's just those small things that they're doing. As you say, the fact he was so out of his depth in this one was felt slightly unusual. The whole blindness at the end was a nice, fresh thing. If they kept doing that sort of thing, it wouldn't be. I mean, people have said that this is going to be a long regeneration series season. That's their guess, that he's going to be slowly regenerating through the season. I don't know. I think the bets...
It could be a way out of it, I suppose, yeah.
I think the bets are off on that. I think Brian's right, though. I think the next three episodes will tell a lot about whether the series is going to change. I think my least favourite was Knock Knock. I mean, I still thought there's some very sweet bits. So the ending between the mother and the son was nice. And I just kind of felt, as I think I said yes last week, that the Bill and the doctor, that there was this sort of slight abrasion, which was never really handled. I kind of wanted him to sort of come back a bit on that, which he didn't, which was a bit sort of series 8-like.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he was pretty horrible the way she just wanted him out of the house, just because basically he's an old person. And he looked kind of hurt as well by that, the way he played it. And it's like, oh.
I got that bit in Knock Knock, because when you think about it, she's now a student of his. He's her professor. And people will talk if he's in the house, kind of thing. So I kind of got that aspect of it. And that's why she kept trying to say, he's my grandfather this way. It was like, don't think anything weird. I'm not a student sleeping with a teacher for grades kind of situation. I was okay with that. But I agree, Knock Knock was, like I said, my least favorite one in there. But it comes down a lot to the end with everybody surviving. There was no need for everybody to survive. You know, like that was like somebody wanting to give us a feel-good moment when it wasn't necessary. Like basically there was no danger in that episode now. You know, all it meant was that, hey, some bugs are going to take you away, but don't worry, you'll be back in a bit. You know, I was real concerned when he saved Bill from dying, which obviously we knew was going to have happened, that meant every spacesuit was going to come back to life. Every person in a spacesuit was going to come back to life. So I was glad to see that in Oxygen that we did not get that. But yeah, I mean, I agree with most of what you said there in Knock Knock. I didn't mind her trying to kick him out. I kind of felt like I got that aspect, but I can see where you're coming from with it, though.
Yeah.
It wasn't, I think there's, it wasn't immediately clear either as well, which I think was a bit of a problem. Like that link to the battery and the abilities of the suit to do what it did.
Yeah.
It could have been a bit clearer, I think, but yeah.
Yeah. It's there still in some ways, like, I would prefer things like that were clearer, like you said, but like being able to enjoy an episode as I have, I'm willing to also let it slide at the same time. But I agree. I do think those things could have been clearer. But in a sense, though, it was kind of... So many solutions are easily guessed in these shows. And it's not a sign of good writing that we didn't get that one, because it wasn't really given to us, you know? But it was nice to see that what he was doing wasn't immediately apparent, you know? Because when he was saying that they all had to die, I thought basically, you know, he had to knock them all unconscious or something and make the suits think that everybody had died. And then, you know, the oxygen was going to kick back on and somehow the suit would revive them. You know, I didn't expect it to be that he was going to reason with the suits. So it was nice to see that my expectation was off.
I had a feeling they were going to do that, but I still got it wrong, because I thought it was going to be on the basis that she would be safe because she wasn't part of the company that they would be after. They realized they're after company assets that were no longer expendable. So when she was no longer part of that she wouldn't have been given the same. She wouldn't have been fired, essentially. So that was where I thought it was going to go. So I kind of had a feeling it was going to end up being reasoning the fact that that it was about the value, that he would change the value of the people so thus they wouldn't be killed. But I got it the wrong way around. I thought that was going to be how she was going to be saved, rather than that was how it was going to totally resolve. So I liked it. I thought it was, the battery thing was a bit of a cop out, I guess, but there was a lot of stuff going on. It worked for me, I suppose. It's just funny when you think that it is so similar to a lot of the other episodes, but somehow it carried a different sort of tension to it. I don't know, a lot of people have said that they thought it was bullshit, the whole idea. I know, like you said, Brian, you didn't particularly like this idea of this oxygen being commodified.
Well, it's not a million miles from the Sunmakers, is it? So, you know.
That's how I kind of felt. It did, and I could almost imagine it in a weird way, and it not being a particularly sensible solution, it being a sort of like a corporate one, that somewhere in the corporate ranks there'd have been a decision that, you know, that if these people were not, you know, these fucking waste of airs could be removed, they could be, I don't know, I could just imagine. So I suppose now we live, as we said, in the era of not just Trump, but in the era of just mad politics, the sort of corporate decisions no longer seem mad either. Everything seems to be game now. So I suppose that helps fiction, because you just feel like anything can happen.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to hit Facebook. There's a couple of comments on the Facebook page. Jonathan Roberts considers it another strong story, but feels that Nadal is becoming a bit irritating. Nick Caulfield considered it scary enough that he would hesitate to show it to his 10-year-old. And Gareth Lloyd says another solid but not groundbreaking episode. Nice to see the show back in space. It reminded me of the old Sixth Doctor comic strips featuring the Skeletoids from DWM. And probably our final point this week, the Doctor's blindness felt like a great new twist for the show. What do you think of that? Because that was a bit of a surprise. I could kind of think it was coming when I was saying he had the shades on. I thought, why has he got the shades on? Could it be that? But, you know, it's something the Doctor's never done. He's never carried across that kind of debilitating effect for the Doctor from one story to the next, has it?
No.
My only concern with the blindness was, we talked about this before, where in his era, everything was so connected arc-wise that you couldn't just watch an individual story without having to watch the entire season, for the most part, because you were going to miss something by the way that they were connected.
Yeah.
This doesn't seem as heavy as that to me, and certainly even the vault would be more heavy because it is their running arc. But I still feel that's more like the Time War to me. Like, we keep learning little bits, and I like that. But the blindness, I have to admit, when it happened, I saw him wearing the sunglasses, I was like, oh yeah, he's still blind. And I just thought, like, I wonder how long he'll be blind, because if he's going to be blind for the majority of the next three episodes, I don't think I would enjoy that. But if it's a lead into to why we're at the story for the next episode, I can get behind that. I don't know. It's just me, though. For some reason, it's like, it's okay. But we'll see how it goes. Maybe my opinion will change next week.
Okay, fair enough. Well, do you know, that brings us to the end of this week's podcast with a K. So let's play you out, dear listener, with a clip from the next episode of Doctor Who, which is Extremis. We'll be back to discuss that next week. Until then, it's goodbye.
The Pope requests most urgently a personal audience.
The Veritas contains a secret.
Everyone who worked on the translation is now dead.
You're blind and you don't want your enemies to know. But why does it have to be a secret from Bill?
You happy in those shades?
In darkness we are revealed.
Very few know this place exists. The Hereticum.
Something's coming, Bill. Something very big. And something possibly very, very bad.
How can I save them when I'm lost in the dark?
This is a Beyond Cast Cerberus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCastCerberus.com.